Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. So as I'm hearing what's going on out in Chicago, and we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now, these 600 employees that Mondelez wants to kick to the curb, they're fighting back. And good, it's about time that workers stand up and fight back. I understand a lawsuit has been filed, which, again, you got to use what's at your disposal. But also, there's some negotiations going on that really, I think, tells a much bigger story, which is why we've asked Ron Baker. He's the strategic campaign coordinator for the BTC GM International Union. Ron, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks, Rick. I really appreciate being on the show again. Thanks.
So I look at this, and I understand you guys have filed a lawsuit with the EEOC, right?
We actually have 455 people out of the 700 to 800 people that actually work on the production side of this bakery file age and race discrimination charged with the EEOC. And the basis for it, Rick, is this, that Mondelez has put capital improvements in that there are other plants in the United States and never asked the workers for anything. And then they come to Chicago and put a demand of $46 million a year or 60% of their wages and benefits on into the future in order to get the same type of investment everywhere else. And they've got the largest numbers of minorities and the largest number of people over 40 at this plant. So
I mean, what is. I mean, it's really that kind of blatantly apparent.
Absolutely. It's blatantly apparent. It's clear that that the offer that they made back on May the 15th about trying to it really wasn't an offer. It was kind of an ultimatum. They said, if you don't give us $46 million, we're taking our production lines to Mexico. And it was clear that they offered that up with no intent of the knowing that the union would never be able to accept that, so that they would have an excuse just to, like, move it down and eliminate a good portion of their minority workforce and people over age 40 out of their production system.
I mean, what would, if you had to take wage cuts on that, what would that look like? I mean, we talking, you know, $5-$10 an hour?
These are good paying union middle class jobs because the efficiencies at these places are very high. I mean, they make a tremendous profit based on the labor of these people. It would amount to about $29 an hour in wages and benefits, and I believe the last time checked, between $50 and $51 an hour when it comes to pensions, health care, and the whole spectrum of things. The folks out in at the bakery make about $25, $26 an hour.
And that's a decent living.
Absolutely. It's a decent living. It's a good middle-class job, and quite frankly, the work that they do for that money, you know, in any industry where you buy your raw materials by the ton and you sell your product by the ounce, you know, there's tremendous profit in there.
Right. But at the end of this, you're talking about employees, since it is a good job, who have been around, who have been loyal to the company. You know, I read that someplace you got people who are 30, 40 years of their life given to that company.
You do, and as a matter of fact, I mean, there's many people there whose parents, grandparents worked there, and some people who were born while their folks worked there, and you know, they were called back then and are today like Nabisco babies, where you know, people were actually parents had them, and then they became part of the workforce there. It's generational.
Yeah. So let's move on. I understand there's some negotiations going on, not just for that plant, but for, you know, the industry wide, as I understand. That's not going well either, is it?
Well, I mean, we're in Charlotte, North Carolina right now. We've been here since the 16th of February trying to reach a fair and reasonable settlement. You know, what I can give you is basically what report went up on the website today. And for those that haven't heard it, I mean, they not only want to ship jobs from Chicago, but they also want to take the defined benefit pension plan from all the 2,200 employees at 8 locations across the United States and replace it with what you and many of the listeners out there have, like, heard many times, a savings plan for the future. Which they claim is better for their employees. But, you know, it's kind of interesting, though, Rick. I mean, with the withdrawal liability from the pension plan that they want to get out of, amounting to about $23 or $24 million a year, they claim that their plan will cost about $30 million to have a savings plan that they put into place. So so, you know, across the table, we asked the question, I mean, so you're willing to pay double for the next 20 to 25, 30 years in order to create a new plan? And the answer to that was yes, which is like pretty, you know,
pretty shocking.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I mean, yep. We get the same thing here, you know, when you talk about public sector pensions and you talk to some of these Republican lawmakers who it's an ideology. It's the blind faith. We're moving from a defined benefit plan here, which is run very efficiently and it doesn't cost as much as the defined contribution. They just believe it's the right thing to do. And that's kind of twisted to me when it's really one of those blind faith ideological things.
Right. Well, I think too. You know, the upper echelon of this corporation and the people that sit at the bargaining table on their behalf seem to. They know that there's a difference between people like Irene Rosenfeld, who's the CEO of this company, and folks that work on the shop floor and in production every day. They want to provide a yearly amount into a savings account of $500, $600, or $1,000 on their behalf. But I'll give you a good example. At year end 2015, according to their statements that they submitted to the Securities and Exchange Commission, Eileen Rosenfeld had a pension plan whose value at the time, at the end of the year, was $35 million.
I'll take that.
Absolutely. I think we could exist on that quite well, and our families, and maybe in the entire towns in which we live in.
I think, you know, saying that, you know, we can have a year's, sure, yeah, I'll take that. Absolutely. Sign me right up. And I think any worker would take that, but that's not what they want for everybody else. For themselves, yes.
Right.
But for the people who actually do the hard work, actually the backbreaking hard work of creating that profit, no, not so much for you. Because we can, because of the insane laws we have in this country, they can move to another country and write it all off on their taxes and it be a windfall for them while they're screwing the community they left behind.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, the other thing too that, you know, is part of the communication around this campaign. You know, they need the American consumer to earnestly be committed to the purchase of their products.
Yep.
However, they don't want anything to do with the American consumer being any part of the production of their products.
Yeah, I just did it
this
weekend.
Ultimately, over time, they kill the goose that laid the golden egg.
Yeah, in fact, I just did that this weekend. The Keystone Progress Group had their big summit. What we do when we put up a table to have people come over and talk, we put candy out to entice people to our table. And I went to the store. I picked up the two bags of Hershey's candy, and I looked for one that said Hershey, Pennsylvania, and the one that said Mexico, and put the one that said Mexico back on the shelf.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people, I know a lot of people, especially in life today, are busy and you know, you run into a store, you run out of a store, and you grab what you can when you're in there. But the message that I have for them and that you practice and a lot of people practice, I mean, the American consumer has all kind of power here. I mean, 20 to 25% of what's made on the earth is like purchased by American consumers, and you know, if you really don't watch what you're doing, you could be helping to create your own demise by purchasing the wrong product.
Yep.
It's like helping them financially secure a means to like do away with your job.
But we hear, you know, the consumer is king and we want cheaper prices. And you look at what's happened with the Walmartification of our country. And there's so many stories out there. The landscape is littered with the loss of millions of good paying American jobs. Also, so Walmart can save a penny or two on a product.
Absolutely. Well, even out here with the 600 that we're fighting for right now, I mean, it was just announced a couple weeks ago in Indianapolis, Indiana, that the 1,200 to 1,400 people that work for Carrier Air Conditioning and you know, those jobs are going to be moved to Mexico too. I mean, you know, quite frankly, it's like the last man standing club. I mean, you know, how much can we suck out of the American economy before the economy collapses and can't afford to buy the cheapest products that's made, no matter where they're made? And if we don't fight this now, if we don't continue to fight as hard as we can for every job, I mean, there will be nothing left to fight over in another 10 years.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And at the end of the day, the job you may be saving is your own. If you want to check out the website, fightforamericanjobs.org, we've got a link at the ricksmithshow.com of how you can take a look at their video. Really a very touching video of people saying, look, you know, and very well done, by the way. I'm saying, look, you know, I've spent my life here. My parents spent their life here. This is part of the community. And to me, Ron, I mean, isn't this issue, like many other ones, isn't this about the heart of what this country is going to be in the future? If we can't save our communities, if we can't save the places where people work to put their kids to school and all that, what are we going to be left with?
Well, that's exactly right. It is the essence of one of the most important things that we need to be doing. Now, unfortunately, these corporations don't have any sense of community. As a matter of fact, they have no sense of country, no sense of patriotism. The only thing that they honor is whatever denomination of currency happens to be the one that makes the most sense for them at the time. But,
right.
Just in that vein, Rick, when society begins to not be functional and not have an economic base where people purchase, people buy, and people make, then the money that they have in the bank will be worthless too. I mean, that's how short-sighted this whole run to the lowest economy to make the highest dollar is.
Yeah, I mean, that race to the bottom takes you actually to the bottom. So last line of question I've got for you, because, you know, for years my generation has been told, you know, the benevolent corporation gave us all these wonderful things like health care and pensions and wages. And, you know, it was the benevolent corporation who gave this stuff. It wasn't the workers who fought for it and the people who bled and died for generations to get it. It was this benevolent corporation. At some point, can we trash this idea of a thing such as a benevolent corporation?
Well, I suppose that if you look hard enough and long enough, you might find a needle in a haystack when it comes to that. But I got to tell you, most of these corporations nowadays, especially these global corporations, are, you know, it's not about making a product. It's about they're in essence a financial organization that uses a means of production and the sale of a certain type of product to generate money. It's
yep.
It's, you know, and there's, you know, corporations are about money. There's no doubt about it. But it's almost like they overlook the primary function of that corporation and buy, sell stock, buy it back. Transactions that are geared more toward the asset value of the corporation rather than the continuous long-term production of a good quality product. They're not community partners anymore. The benevolency, if it was ever really there, has long since evaporated with the onset of CEOs that make $30, $40, $50 million a year and don't care about anybody else.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is where I'm hoping we can put this benevolency thing to bed, put it to rest, bury it, do whatever, burn it, whatever you got to do with it, because it comes back to politics. It comes to who we've put into elected offices who allow these companies to get away with the stuff that they're getting away with. It's the trade policies. It's the tax breaks that we give them. It's all of that stuff. And until I think we wake up and realize that these aren't benevolent corporations, they're almost predators, and that need to be regulated, I don't think anything changes.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the one thing I'll say, the importance of politics. I mean, a lot of people are so turned off by politics, they don't want to be involved, but politics touches every particular aspect of your life. The wrong person, whether it be a court appointee, whether it be an elected official on a local, state, or federal level, impacts your life, and you need to be part of the process to make sure you're electing people that do the right thing for you.
Yeah, Ron, I wish you guys the best. As this continues, we'd love to have you guys back and keep us informed of where things are at, all right?
Well, thank you, Rick, and I appreciate it. Take care of yourself.
Always great talking to you, Ron Baker, Strategic Campaign Coordinator with the BCTGM International Union. You also want to check out their website, fightforamericanjobs.org. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Ron Baker's name. Take you right there. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Farm no more. Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.